Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Interesting debate last night, or town hall, or dueling press conference, or whatever you want to call it. A couple of things I want to get into in this first hour. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about Acorn. Limbaugh going off, not just Limbaugh, the whole right, the whole screaming, frantic, hysterical right, concerned about more people being registered to vote, and the raid yesterday in Las Vegas, and also the economic meltdown. The Fed has dropped the prime rate by five-tenths of a point, or by half a point, the interbank interest rate, and It bounced a little bit. It seemed to help the market for a little bit, but the market's still down. Why? Well, because commercial paper is still very expensive. And there's a core issue here. A core issue, which is that we don't make things in the United States anymore. We're not generating wealth in this country. We are now the world's largest importer of finished goods and the world's largest exporter of raw materials, which is the definition of a third world nation. And so you don't have a country coming back from the brink of economic disaster when there's very little foundation underneath all that stuff. I mean, there's real sound, meaningful structural problems we have. We have an annual budget of about $3 trillion. That's the federal budget. We now have, as a result of just three presidents, Reagan, Bush, and Bush, a national debt of $10 trillion. Three times. That's the equivalent. Let's say you made $70,000 a year and you've got $210,000 on your credit card. That's where we're at right now as the United States of America. And that's why, you know, dropping the prime rate a half a point is not going to help. In Britain, they're actually buying their banks. They're actually bailing out their banks. They're bailing them out by buying them. They're nationalizing them. This is the headline in today's, on the front page of today's Financial Times. UK banks to be part nationalized. The subhead, Brown, who's the prime minister, acts after lenders' shares plummet. Spain follows U.S. strategy. In Spain, they're taking federal money and basically giving it to the banks. But Mr. Brown is doing it right. This from today's front page, the screaming, the top, not just the top half, the top two-thirds of the front page of the Financial Times. Prime Minister Brown, Mr. Brown is expected to insist the taxpayer receives generous dividends and profits if share prices recover, because the government's actually buying these banks and then putting money into them. The move came as Spain became the first European country to follow the U.S. in offering to buy assets from its banks to restore liquidity, announcing an emergency fund worth 30 to 50 billion euros, 41 to 68 billion dollars, U.S. dollars. And then the headline below that, Fed opens door for interest rate cuts but fails to calm markets, as we'll see. And what's going on here is that we have created this enormous bubble of phony wealth. Kevin Phillips wrote about this, his book Bad Money, some years ago. I mean, this is Kevin Phillips actually has been screaming about it for years, as have I on this program, for 6 years. Go over to economyincrisis.org if you want to get the straight scoop. And the only way that we've been able to support, ever since Reagan began the deconstruction of the foundation of this country, and the only way that we've been able to support this country once once we stopped making things and once our middle class stopped having wealth, was to have people go into debt. And our people are in debt, and our government is in debt, and the bill has come due. And we're going to have to go through a period of time where we wring this thing out, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be tight. It already is for a lot of people. Several $1 trillion in pension wealth is gone. I mean, as the market has dropped 5,000 points in the last year and a half. This is the George W. Bush and Herbert Hoover clones. And I don't know anybody who hasn't been hurt by this. I know, speaking for myself, Louise and I, I'd say probably a third of our savings have evaporated in this mist. So it's like, I don't claim to be a brilliant investment advisor, but I can tell you I do understand economics enough to know that this ship is in deep trouble. So anyhow, we had the debate last night in the midst of this. And of course, economics were a big part of it. And John McCain seemed to comport himself, reasonably well. You can't criticize him too much, I suppose. Here, one of the...
I'm an old man. I hate everything but Matlock. Who is that now?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. That's the wrong clip. Let's see. Where's the right clip? Here we go.
The Democrats for you.
Oh, it's the Democrats. Oh, no. See, that's the wrong one, too. All right, here we go. This is Barack Obama talking about health care.
It should be a right for every American. In a country as wealthy as ours, for us to have people who are going bankrupt because they can't pay their medical bills. For my mother to die of cancer at the age of 53 and have to spend the last months of her life in the hospital room arguing with insurance companies because they're saying that this may be a pre-existing condition and they don't have to pay her treatment, there's something fundamentally wrong about that.
Amen. And he starts out his first words. This is the critical part. Is health care a right? When the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence talks about the right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How do you have the right to life if your life can be taken from you because you can't get health care?
I think it should be a right.
I think it should be a right, says Barack Obama. John McCain, it's a responsibility. In other words, you're on your own. That's the ownership society. You're on your own. Good luck, Charlie. McCain says he's going to go after Bin Laden.
I'll get Osama Bin Laden, my friends. I'll get him. I know how to get him. I'll get him no matter what.
Yeah. Then why haven't you gotten him, sir? I would assume that Bush listens to your advice. And then Obama talking
about... Senator McCain suggests that somehow, I'm green behind the ears and, I'm just spouting off and he's somber and responsible. Senator McCain, this is the guy who sang Bomb, Bomb, Bomb Iran, who called for the annihilation of North Korea. That I don't think is an example of speaking softly. This is the person who, after we hadn't even finished Afghanistan, where he said, next up, Baghdad.
Yeah. Now, did I get this right or not? I got an email from somebody pointing it out also, which verified what I thought I saw. But Jordan, I don't know if he wants his last name on the air, so I won't put it out. But he says, after the debate technically ended, Tom Brokaw was trying to do his closing statement. McCain, seeming confused and unaware, was wandering into the camera shot. To me, it seemed like Obama was immediately aware of this, ran over and tried to steer McCain out of the shot. McCain was having none of it and gave McCain the get your damn hands off me look. It all happened in seconds. But that's not what made this exchange of body language iconic. That bit came with McCain's rejection of Obama. Obama had the chance to let McCain twist in the wind, and he did not. He decided to stand in the camera shot with McCain so that if anybody looked dumb, they both would. It was only after Brokaw said, guys, you're blocking my teleprompter, that both moved out of the shot. And Jordan says, I guarantee you, if I notice this, the Saturday Night Live is going to have a field day with it. It was like a gift to comedy writers everywhere. Did you see that, too? I mean, it seemed to me that is what was going on. So, broadly speaking, my biggest take on this is that John McCain was playing the role.
I used to be with it, but then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it, and what's it seems weird and scary to me. It'll happen to you.
Yeah, he came across like, you know, the old guy going, "Get off my lawn, you young whippersnapper." And every time McCain, every time Obama would get up to talk, McCain would jump out of his chair and start pacing around. Like, "He's on my lawn. What's he doing on my lawn? This is my lawn." And it was weird. It was just freaky weird. And I think that for me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but for me that kind of iconically summarizes the entire evening. Old man shouts at young guy, "Get off my lawn." So, anyway, my take on that. I want to tell you about what happened with Acorn and how the right wing is ginning this thing up, and then we'll take your calls at the bottom of the hour. It's 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. In our second hour, by the way, Terry Jeffrey is going to drop by. We'll get the conservative take on this. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That's John McCain in the debates last night. I think the consensus is that Barack Obama won the debate. And in fact, McCain, John and Cindy McCain left the debate. John McCain and his second wife left the debate immediately afterwards. And Barack Obama and Michelle Obama stuck around for a half hour shaking hands. He basically owned that room. Barack Obama owned that room. And you know, I think it's because he knew that he had done well and McCain knew that he had done poorly and he just wanted to get out of town. His answers were rambling. They were semi-coherent at times. They were patched together pieces of concatenated fragments from stump speeches. McCain was having a tough time last night. But anyway, I want to talk about Acorn. The Reich is going off on this. Every single right-wing talk show in America, it seems, is doing triple duty, trying to attack the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. Acorn, acorn.org is their website. A group worthy of your support, let me add. And because they've been registering people to vote. And, of course, as you know, as Paul Weyrich laid out back in 1995, that's not something that is a good idea for Republicans. This is Paul Weyrich speaking to a group of Christian Republicans in a church a little over 10 years ago.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So Nevada authorities seized records Tuesday from a group they accuse of submitting fraudulent voter registration forms, including for the starting lineup of the Dallas Cowboys. They raided the headquarters of Acorn. Now, what has happened here, one of the people, Bertha Lewis, the interim chief organizer for Acorn, says, for the past 10 months, anytime Acorn has identified a potentially fraudulent application, we turn that application into election officials separately and offer to provide election officials with the information they would need to pursue an investigation or prosecution of the individual. She said Acorn had turned in 46 problem applications submitted by 33 former employees to election officials in the Las Vegas area, where it has registered to 80,000 people. So they turned in 46. They turned in just short of 50 that they flagged. And they said, we think these are suspicious. So Bob Walsh, the spokesman for Mr. Miller, the state attorney general, who raided, along with the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Nevada, raided Acorn's offices yesterday, said, you don't have to read too many cop novels to know that sometimes people will tell you a grain of truth to try to hide the rest of the truth. I'm certainly not suggesting that Acorn is that nefarious, but at the same time, just because they handed over 50 to you doesn't mean there aren't 150 others out there. So what would the Republicans do if they wanted to discredit Acorn? Maybe go say, hey, I'd like to register to vote and give Tony Romo's name, right? Or Terrell Owens. Guys from, you know, the starting lineup, the Dallas Cowboys. That, you know, your average organizer may or may not know. I don't know, person, you know, taking it. But these potentially phony voter registrations, which I, particularly if they're done with, I mean, like this, you know, with these obvious phony names. In the past, people have tried to register as Daffy Duck and things. And Acorn identifies these and flags them and says to the Secretary of State, we think these are fraudulent. And for that, the Secretary of State has busted into their offices and hauled away their computers. This is just so wrong. And yet, on the right, I mean, yesterday Limbaugh was going through this long rant about how they're getting ready to steal the election. This is the story that the Republicans are going to tell themselves in November, on November 5th, if Barack Obama wins this election, is that he won it by fraud. That Acorn, this nefarious organization that has, oh my God, black people working for it. It's a community organizing organization, you know. And there's a black person on its website. I mean, listen to some of these right wingers, these right wing talk show hosts. They're going off about this stuff. And they are not only setting up the racial side of it, they're just the whole thing right across the board. They're getting ready for an Obama presidency to try to delegitimize it from day one. And if Barack Obama is elected president, he can expect the same kind of absolutely relentless attacks that Bill Clinton experienced. The 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year, nonstop, relentless slime machine will be running in high gear as it already is. And here we have rallies with kill 'em and sit down, boy. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Grandpa had a bad night. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Vince in Anacortes, Washington. Hey, Vince, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm a full disclosure here. Even though I live kind of up in the northwest part of the U.S., I belong to the New Orleans branch of Acorn because I go down there. Well, it'll be three winters so far, again this winter, to do volunteer work post-Katrina. And four years ago, Acorn here in Washington State did a voter registration thing, and they admitted they did it the wrong way because they paid people to get names, and they found it was fraudulent, so they turned it in. And none of those people voted at all. Yet, the Republicans wanted to politicize it, and as a result, the local attorney general, U.S. attorney, was fired. McKay, a brilliant man, was working on some wonderful projects to coordinate different agencies during emergency, but he wouldn't politicize it, so he got fired.
Detected.
Excuse me, my computer just freaked out. You finish. So same thing going on in New Orleans has happened in
the voter registration thing.
Right.
Yeah, the New Orleans thing is it's an incredible organization. My gosh. I go down there. I'm 68 years old, but I work with all these college kids. I work with lawyers. I work with all kinds of people coming down and helping out. I mean, it draws in, huge thousands of college students who don't go to the beach. They come down to help. And it's so gratifying to work with a group like that. I mean, they even called me at 3:45 in the morning to tell me where to get the bus to avoid Gustav, even though I'm clearing the other side of the country.
Yeah.
So they're looking out for their members.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. ACORN is a good organization, a fine organization, doing some really, really important work in the United States. They basically picked up where the League of Women Voters left off.
Right.
League of Women Voters has been threatened and intimidated, and they basically backed down. ACORN isn't backing down. And the Republicans are doing everything they can to stop these voter registration drives. Vince, good on you for what you're doing, and thanks a lot for sharing your story with us. Appreciate it. Kathy in Boise, Idaho. Hey, Kathy, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm great, but I'll get better.
Well, I'm bleeding money. I wanted to talk about the debate last night, and when McCain said, and who voted for that? It was a bill he said that Bush wanted. He said, that one. I truly believe he's a racist. I truly believe that. He won't look at him. He won't do anything. I mean, then he's talking to a young African-American asking a question about the economy. And he starts talking about Fannie Mae. This is McCain. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and saying, well, I'm sure you've never heard of those before. I mean, who does he think he is?
Yeah. He's betraying, he grew up, this is a guy who grew up in an America where it was not just legal, but it was commonly practiced, I mean, all across the country, to have whites-only rooms and colored entrances and whites-only swimming pools and water fountains. And, you know, I vaguely remember that stuff from being a little kid in the 50s. There was one particularly really fancy restaurant in Lansing, Michigan, where I grew up that had a colored entrance around the side. I remember the beginning of busing. But, McCain, being 20 years older than I am, came of age, or almost 20 years older than I am, came of age at a time when we lived in an apartheid country. And, that has to color your thinking. That has to color your perspective. I know just my experience as a kid, I am very aware of that. And I think that, the young people today, thank God we've got a generation coming up where basically they don't see color the way that people of McCain's generation, or for that matter, my generation did.
I'm older too, and my children. I am pleased with that. My grandchildren do not see color.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm so thankful for that. I'm very frightened about this election, and I'm going to do as you said to do. I will be a poll watcher. I am going to go out, and I'm going to get so involved. I'm going to do whatever it takes from now until election. I'll walk the streets. I'll do whatever it takes.
That's great.
So please, keep pushing that.
I will. Kathy, thank you very much. And be sure to get out there and volunteer quickly, because the clock is ticking. I appreciate the call. Dave in Granby, Massachusetts, listening to WHMP. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I have a suggestion for what may have been the second dumbest question of the night.
Okay.
It was sort of the obligatory, how much do you love Israel question, where the retired Navy chief asked, if Iran attacked Israel with a nuclear weapon, basically how long would it take you to send in the 82nd Airborne, or would you ask permission from the UN first?
Right.
And I just wish that both sides could get some perspective on Iran's nuclear program. I mean, I got to tell you, I don't lose a minute's sleep, you know, worrying that Iran is going to attack Israel with a nuclear weapon. And I just wish that
no, it would be a suicide act. And beyond that, the UN Charter calls for mutual self-defense and for collective self-defense. We would be entirely justified, even under the UN Charter, if Israel was attacked by a nuclear Iran, for example, or anybody.
To go to their
defense, which is what Barack Obama pointed out, and John McCain as well. But you know, the there's a larger text to that, Dave, I think, and that is that Tom Brokaw was the filter for the questions. He was deciding who was going to ask what of whom.
Yeah.
And here I have the September 30th, 2008 New York Times article by Jacques Steinberg, headline, NBC Plans Future of Meet the Press. Less widely known is that Mr. Brokaw has played a pivotal role out of public view, both within NBC and in its dealings with the campaign of John McCain in particular. Mr. Brokaw has said that he has also conducted some shuttle diplomacy in recent weeks between NBC and the McCain campaign. His mission, he said, was to assure the candidate's aides, despite some negative on-air commentary by Mr. Olbermann in particular, that Mr. McCain could still get a fair shake from NBC News. And then asked if he had spent time with Mr. McCain as contrasted with Mr. Obama, who he does not know socially. Oh, asked if time he had spent with Mr. McCain as contrasted with Mr. Obama, whom Mr. Brokaw does not know personally, would be of any help to Mr. McCain in the debate. Brokaw promised it would not. And I think that, you know, finding a Navy, a guy who was in the Navy and handing that guy to John McCain right off the bat with a real hot potato like that was Tom Brokaw's kiss on the cheek to friendly kiss on the cheek, not a mafia kiss on the cheek to John McCain. I think that, you know, frankly, but maybe I'm wearing a tinfoil hat. I don't know. But thanks for the call. Frank in Los Angeles. Hey, Franks.
Yeah, you know, what irritates me so much is that talking to my Republican friends,
mm-hmm.
How brain dead they are about the issues. All they think about is ideology. And, you know, when you talk to them, everything is collapsing in front of them, and they blame it on the Democrats. Believe it or not, this guy sent me an email, and he blamed it on the Democrats, all this happening. And I emailed him back. I said, if you believe in garbage, you just swallow some, because name me one thing that Republicans have done for this country. Roosevelt gave us Social Security. We got Medicare from Johnson, 40-hour week, overtime, unions, etc. Name me something. And I said,
they gave us tax cuts for billionaires.
Rush Limbaugh said that Roosevelt is dead as soon as his policies are. I said that Reagan is dead, but his policy lives on. And the same thing happened under Reagan. Are you blind that you can't see this? The same thing is happening.
Yeah.
The same economic policies, the same ideologies. You know, what it is that these people are really... They hate minorities. They hate immigrants. And Reagan legalized 3.5 million illegals in this country, and they still don't blame him for that.
Yeah, and Reagan kicked off his campaign at a historic site of a terrible racial incident, and referenced it in code. And there was a very, very racist subtext to Reagan's campaign, particularly the way it was kicked off. Thanks for the call, Park in San Obispo, California.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that I don't think they'll find any fraud at the Acorn, but even if they did, you know, that bottom-up fraud is nothing compared to top-down fraud, like we heard yesterday about the Colorado 1 in 5, you know, like just like the meat cleaver taken to the voter rolls. And
yeah.
I also wanted to say, too, that I liked how Obama put the hatchet in John McCain's hand last night, saying your spending freeze is a hatchet job. You know, it was beautiful. But I'm just amazed at how often – you know, the top-down approach is associated with maximum damage. I wish Obama would say that more. I mean, the bailout was top-down. Maximum damage can follow, not every time, but it seems to surely be likely by all the evidence that we see around us.
It needs to be said more often. Barack Obama said it last night, that what we're seeing here is the failure of right-wing ideology. And this ideology is destroying America. It's destroying our economy. It has hollowed us out for the last 26 years. It is ruining us. And Obama needs to say it more often. He needs to say it more often. He said it once. There were a couple of great lines last night that he said once. And hopefully they'll get repeated over and over again. And hopefully Joe Joe Biden will get back on the stump now. You know, tragically, his mother-in-law was sick and then died. And but he needs to get back and start playing the role that Sarah Palin has been playing of attack dog. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Have you seen the book of piggies in the starched white shed?
Our piggy alert.
Who will find the book of piggies stirring up the dead? Always have clean sheds to play around with.
Well, on Monday, what we heard was about Lehman Brothers, how they were, as they were pleading for a federal bailout for bankruptcy protection, they were approving millions of dollars in bonuses for departing executives. That from the New York Times, Lehman managers portrayed as irresponsible. Isn't that a nice word? Irresponsible. 4 days before the bank filed for bankruptcy protection, Lehman's compensation committee was asked to grant $20 million in special payments for three executives who were leaving. The firm moved forward with $5 billion in bonuses, $4 billion in shares, and $750,000 in dividend payments between 2007 and the firm's bankruptcy filing September 15th. And then they go on, this on MSNBC, Lehman Brothers CEO John Fold. Waxman quoted Fold as saying in one document, "Don't worry," to the suggestion that executives go without bonuses. That suggestion came from Lehman's money management subsidiary, Neuberger Berman. That's the name of the company. Who is the head of that? Well, Waxman quoted him, this Lehman executive, who's the head of Neuberger Berman, who oversaw some of their employees, responded in a dismissive tone to the idea of going without bonuses. This man that Waxman quoted, he wrote, "Sorry, team, I'm not sure what's in the water at 605 3rd Avenue today. I'm embarrassed and I apologize." In other words, don't worry, you're not going to lose your bonuses. Who is that person? Well, here from Pension and Investments magazine, George Herbert Walker is the kingpin in the newly reincarnated asset management firm that's emerging from the collapse of Lehman Brothers Holdings, Inc. When Mr. Walker assumed the role of managing director and global head of the investment management unit at the New York-based investment bank late in 2006, an investment banker said everyone in the universe is watching what George Walker will do at Lehman. The same is true now that Mr. Walker has managed to negotiate a deal to sell the $230 billion asset management division he heads to private equity firms Bain Capital Partners LLC New York and Hellman & Friedman LLC San Francisco. The Bush family, this is George Bush's cousin. The Bush family doing very well, thank you very much. Meanwhile, as we give $85 billion of your tax dollars and mine to AIG, a week later, what happens? Well, as Martin Sullivan, the former chief executive of AIG, testified before Congress, this from today's Financial Times, "In a moment of drama, usually reserved for U.S. courtrooms, Mr. Waxman showed off pictures of the grand staircase, sparkling fountain, and white columns of the St. Regis Resort in Monarch Beach, California. AIG executives had convened there for a week-long retreat just 1 week after the U.S. Treasury saved it from certain failure with an $85 billion bailout. Bills obtained by the committee showed the fallen insurer, and some argue U.S. taxpayers, paid nearly $200,000 for rooms, $150,000 for meals, and $23,000 for spa charges. Yes, manicures, pedicures, massages, and heaven only knows what else." Republicans really know how to run a business, don't they? And they really know how to run a country. Mike in Exeter, Pennsylvania. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
Fine. What's up?
A couple points, if I can make them real quick, I'll try to be brief. First of all, my question is, a lot of these mortgages that are defaulting, property taxes are tied into these that go back to local municipalities. Now, is the federal government in this bailout plan taking responsibilities for these property taxes to support these municipalities who right now are struggling under the stranglehold of fuel taxes and rising prices?
Right.
Second of all, I don't know if anybody caught it last night in the debate, but John McCain called for a spending freeze across the board, except for military spending.
Right.
At what point did John McCain buy into such a failed military policy that he now considers the population of other countries in this world to be more important than the senior citizens and the people who built this country and gave you and me the ability to live the lifestyle that we've become accustomed to?
No, good point, Mike. And it's also a flip-flop for Mr. McCain. He has in the past said that he could find fraud and waste in the Pentagon. He's said that, but ain't going to happen. Robert in Huntington Beach. Hey, Robert, California.
How are you?
I'm well. Your point, please.
First of all, you must see the Dennis Prager, Stephanie. You must hear the Stephanie Miller-Dennis Prager debate. They had one after last night's debate.
Mm.
And it really explains, you know, Dennis Prager, the way he goes into, he made one point that just epitomizes all Republicans in a way. He was saying how he only wants to be loved by his family and friends and not by the world. And I thought
Robert, thank you very much. I'm very familiar with Dennis Prager. I debated him at the DNC. It's, that's fine. Patrick in Portland. Hey, Patrick.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I listened to the local righty up here, Lars Larson, and he had a caller on, and she asked what was Acorn.
Mm-hmm.
And he began to explain to her, and he explained it to her very eloquently. And then he went on this rant about how Acorn has signed up all of these people, and they took these loans, and they couldn't afford them, when actually they were, the loans, these were predatory loans and stuff of that nature. And that the right side is, you know, blaming this whole meltdown on people because they couldn't pay their mortgages.
Yeah, no, it's tragic. It's really tragic, Patrick, the way these things are being portrayed. I'm not going to comment on somebody else's talk show, but it's tragic. Art in Kuskin, Oklahoma. Hey, Art, got about a half a minute here before I got to wrap up.
I won't be long. I put on my tinfoil hat when you're talking about Tom Brokaw giving John McCain a kiss.
Yeah.
Rick Warren, who did the first debate, Jim Lehrer, Tom Brokaw, and John McCain are all members of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if they're all members of the, what is that, Grove, the place in California where everybody goes and dresses up like, satanic figures or something every year. I don't know. It's, but whether they are or not, I mean, basically what they all are members of is the Millionaires Club. That's the big club that these guys are all members of. And John McCain's worth $100 million. Tom Brokaw's doing very well. Thank you very much. Barack Obama's a member of the Millionaires Club just because he has a best-selling book, and that's it. I mean, you know, otherwise, he just paid off his student loans a couple of years ago. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. Terry Jeffrey on the line with us. He's the editor-in-chief at CNSNews.com. Terry, the conservative take on last night's debate.
Hey, Tom. The conservative take?
Yeah.
I thought that John McCain got off to a bad start when he offered to buy up mortgages and renegotiate them, which is something we already did to the tune of $700 billion in the bailout bill that went through Congress last week. With his support, I don't think that was going to move conservatives too much. I think the general ground that the debate was fought on was not good for McCain. It was, the primary topic was the economy again, understandably, but that's obviously not good for McCain. And when they talked about foreign policy, there wasn't a single one of the foreign policy questions that actually mentioned Iraq, although both Obama and McCain brought Iraq up. Iraq has faded from the news as things have gotten better there, in large part because of the strategy that John McCain advocated, but I don't think he's getting any political benefit out of that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would disagree with you to some extent that the so-called, you're talking about the surge, You know, I think that ethnic cleansing and 4.5 million people being forced into refugee status, and Google Earth shows entire Sunni neighborhoods that used to be places that, that were, you know, where American soldiers would go and were killed are now black, just totally browned out. I mean, there's nobody living there anymore. They're empty. And the fact that we are now paying the guys who used to shoot at us $100 a week to not shoot at us, and all of that stuff started about a week or two before the surge, and the drop off in violence preceded the surge. And so I would, you know, I'd respectfully submit that the surge, you know, while it might have stabilized some areas, you know, it hasn't provided political reconciliation. Basically, what we're doing is we're paying people not to shoot at us, and we're engaging in ethnic cleansing.
Let me just state one fact in rebuttal to you. In the month of September, there was not a single casualty in Anbar. Not one in Anbar was secured by the Iraqi military. So the field that was the heartland of the Sunni Triangle in Iraq,
right,
where there was a question of whether the people there would ever be reconciled with the Shiite-controlled government, and where the U.S. was taking the lion's share of its casualties only a year ago, now it is completely, absolutely pacified, under control of a military that is controlled by the Shiite-dominated government in Baghdad. That is a remarkable accomplishment, both politically and militarily in America.
Yeah, you just made my point. You realize Anbar is the place where we're passing out $100 a week to not shoot at Americans.
No, Anbar is the place where
we're funding the awakening militias there.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. And they have made peace with the Iraqi government, and they have made peace with us. And there is remarkable calm and stability in Iraq, considering where we were a year ago. I mean, in fact, most of Iraq is pacified, and we are making political progress there. And some people may not like it, but the truth is we're winning the war in Iraq. And I agree that's not going to do much politically for John McCain.
Yeah, we can disagree on the rhetoric, but in any case, I don't think either one of us is going to convince the other of Mr. Greenspan. Gideon, I don't know if you read the Financial Times, but Gideon Rockman had a great column yesterday. I believe it was yesterday, might have been the day before. The headline, Conservatism Overshoots Its Limit. We're talking with Terry Jeffrey, by the way, the editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. He says, Gideon Rockman says, Mr. Greens, he says the market for ideas, like the market for shares, always overshoots. And how conservative ideas starting with Greenspan and Reagan had become fashionable, and then they became bizarre. And in fact, the graphic is a picture of the world swinging and Reagan, Thatcher, and Greenspan flying off it. He says, Mr. Greenspan was considered such a, this is, by the way, you know, a conservative guy writing in arguably the world's leading conservative newspaper. Mm-hmm. Mr. Greenspan was considered such a guru that last year Senator John McCain suggested putting him in charge of a committee on tax reform, adding, if he's dead or alive, it doesn't matter. If he's dead, just prop him up and put on some dark glasses on him. And then Rockman goes on to say, the Reagan-Thatcher era, the promotion of home ownership, he says the current financial crisis can be traced to three of the central ideas of the Reagan-Thatcher era: the promotion of home ownership, financial deregulation, and a fervent faith in the market. They have created a disaster. In April 2005, Mr. Greenspan praised subprime mortgages for helping to widen home ownership and hailed them as representative of the market responses that have driven the financial services industry throughout the history of our country, end quote. Investment bankers, the shock troops of the Reagan-Thatcher revolution, were allowed to bet their banks on this new market. Other signature ideas of the Reagan-Thatcher era, privatization, skepticism about environmentalism, and democracy promotion are all part of the same intellectual overshoot. And then he goes on, at the very end, he quotes David Cameron, the leader of Britain's conservatives. He says, we should accept that we cannot impose democracy at the barrel of a gun. We cannot drop democracy from 10,000 feet, speaking of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, you've got
conservatives saying conservative ideas are bankrupt.
Well, listen, first of all, some of those ideas you're summarizing there are not all conservative ideas. And this whole idea of the United States promoting democracy around the world traces itself back to Woodrow Wilson, a liberal democratic president. It is not a foreign policy that is embraced by the conservative movement. But as to Alan Greenspan, yeah, Alan Greenspan was a denizen of Wall Street. I would not call him a conservative either, and I think we discussed this before. I believe there was a shared interest of Wall Street investment banks, the government-sponsored enterprises, namely Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. politicians who wanted to take credit with people for getting them into homes that they could not afford, and legislation in Washington that they promoted to do that. I don't think in any way you can tie it to Ronald Reagan. I do think that President Bush has some blame, but if you want to look at legislative acts and actual public policy, you have the Community Reinvestment Act under Jimmy Carter. You have the expansion of that.
Terry? We just, yeah. Terry, I think your cell phone has done gone. So, anyhow, we were talking with Terry Jeffrey and hearing the right-wing take on this thing. And, man, there's just some strange stuff going on. Here, our voting machine alert for the day.
Just a touch of a screen. Welcome to the future. Come try our voting machine.
This is from the Charlotte Observer. You can read it over at charlotteobserver.com, as in Charlotte, North Carolina. Newly registered voters in North Carolina might not realize a glitch in straight ticket voting. Is the headline under the photo. Jim Bones, the Associated Press photographer. Imagine, for example, you're a first-time voter with a desire to vote a straight party. Writes James Hamilton for the Observer. You look at the ballot. It says a straight party vote is a vote for all candidates of that party in partisan offices. If you followed those directions, filled in the Democratic or Republican oval in the straight party voting section, and then left, you'd think you just voted for president. But you would be wrong. On North Carolina's ballot, the presidential contest is not included in the list of partisan offices. So if you're in North Carolina and you vote straight ticket, Republican or Democratic, you are not voting for president. Something you might want to know about. So, Terry, you were telling us, and I have a feeling where this was going is the subprime crisis is all the fault of Democrats.
No, it's certainly not all the fault of Democrats, but it is not the fault of a vision of free markets and limited government. The subprime.
It certainly is. It goes back to deregulation.
Well, no, I disagree. I believe it was an intervention of what government wanted to promote subprime mortgages. Namely, they wanted people who could not afford a home, could not get a loan for a mortgage, to be able to get it. And they promoted policies through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, including allowing people to get mortgages without 20% down payment, discounting the
right. Mortgage. This was reducing the regulations.
Wait a minute. Allowing them to get mortgages, Tom, when they had impaired credit histories. Fannie Mae was a government-sponsored enterprise that promised to buy up those subprime mortgages. They did. They bundled them into these mortgage-backed securities, sold them off to the Wall Street banks. There's a whole chain of people who made money in there.
Yeah, no, we're all very familiar with it, Terry. And in fact, here's George Bush promoting.
Freddie Mac recently began 25 initiatives around the country to dismantle barriers and create greater opportunities for homeownership.
I think you've heard this.
One of the programs is designed to help deserving families who have bad credit histories to qualify for homeownership loans. You don't have to have a lousy home for first-time home buyers. You put your mind to it, the first-time home buyer, the low-income home buyer, can have just as nice a house as anybody else.
Now, the Republicans are packaging this as the ownership society, Terry. The Bush administration branded this. They put a logo on it. I'll give you that there were a whole bunch of Democrats who were on board with it. But it was deregulation. They were doing away with regulations put into place during the Roosevelt administration that defined certain minimums to qualify for Fannie Mae mortgages.
No, there's a fundamental, when the government gets deeper into something, Tom, that's not deregulation. When the government either explicitly or implicitly says, if you make that risky loan, first of all, we want you to make that risky loan, so here are ways we are going to induce you to do it, namely through
right,
the Community Reinvestment Act. But if you make that risky loan, we're going to take the risk off you by buying up the loan, which is eventually it went through Fannie Mae to the investment bank and now to the U.S. Treasury and now to you and me. That is more government, not less. If the government had never implied that it would guarantee these things, these loans would never have been made.
So you should talk to Karl Rove and say, hey, you know, why did you push George Bush out there to brand this ownership society thing and promote people, you know, to talk about how wonderful it is that people, particularly minorities, I mean, Bush started out.
More people own their homes in America today. 2/3 of all Americans own their homes. Yeah, we have a problem here in America because fewer than half of the Hispanics and half of the African Americans own the home.
I mean, that's how he started the speech.
Well, look, clearly it's a good thing to expand home ownership in America, but not through government intervention, because now we're seeing the end of the road. Well, actually, we're not seeing the end of the road, but we're seeing one of the consequences of this.
I think we're seeing just the beginning of it.
Well, Terry, we may be.
Terry, stick around over the break.
Sure.
Sure.
Okay, Terry Jeffrey with the CNSNews.com, the website. I want to ask you after the break about people who are consorting with terrorists. This is an interesting one. 17 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program here on Air America Radio. We'll be right back. 866-303-2270. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. AirAmerica.com for a free video.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour of Tom Hartman's program. By the way, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Go to Teamster.org for more information. And we're talking with Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief at CNSNews.com. Terry, and by the way, our website, TomHartman.com, looks like it's down for the moment. You can go to TomHartman.org. There's a link to our chat room if you want to get there from there as well. Joe Vogler and the Alaska Independence Party. You're familiar with this, Terry?
No, I'm not.
You're not? Okay. Up until, you know, Sarah Palin's been talking a lot about how Barack Obama was consorting, palling around, was the phrase she used, with Bill Ayers, who, when Barack Obama was 8 years old, was one of the founders of the Weather Underground, which did some pretty awful stuff. But her husband, up until 1992, was an actual card-carrying, meeting-attending member of the Alaska Independence Party. And, in fact, Sarah Palin recorded the, welcome to the party for the Alaska Independence Party in 2008. Here's the opening of that.
I'm Governor Sarah Palin, and I am delighted to welcome you to the 2008 Alaskan Independence Party Convention.
So that's, you know, Sarah Palin saying, isn't this wonderful? Her husband's a member, and the founder of the Alaska Independence Party is a guy named Joe Vogler, who used to always carry a magnum with him. I was fond of saying, when the bureaucrats come after me, I suggest they wear red coats. They make better targets of the federal government. They are the biggest liars in the United States, and I hate them with a passion. There comes a time when people will choose to die with honor rather than live with dishonor. That time may be coming here. And he said this in a speech before the United Nations in 1993. And how did he get to speak before the UN? Iran. He got Iran to sponsor him. So here you have a terrorist organization. Here's Joe Vogler actually in his own words.
The fires of hell are frozen glaciers compared to my hatred for the American government. And I won't be buried under their damn flag. I'll be buried in Dawson. And when Alaska is an independent nation, they can bring my bones home back to my country.
And this guy and this terrorist organization, Sarah Palin's husband was a member of until 6 years ago. And she has the audacity to talk about Barack Obama sitting on a board with a guy who, when Barack Obama was 8 years old, was a member of this violent offshoot of the SDS.
Well,
I don't get it, Terry.
I have to tell you, number one, Tom, I've never heard of this character, but you did not say in there that his organization bombed the Pentagon.
His organization is openly calling for Alaska to secede from the United States of America.
That you did not say that this guy's organization actually bombed the Capitol or bombed the Pentagon, which the weathermen did. And Barack Obama may say that he was 8 years old when the weathermen were doing that, but in 2001, when he was 40 years old, Mr. Ayers was quoted in the New York Times saying that he did not regret or repent of those things.
Yeah, I know. And Barack Obama never joined the Weathermen. Obama never joined the Weathermen. Palin joined the Alaska Independence Party.
You're saying that Sarah Palin's husband did this. Now, I have no idea. And I have no idea who this guy is that you just played for me. But Barack Obama was an associate of Bill Ayers. And Bill Ayers did do those things. And people can make a judgment. People can make a judgment of any of the associations that Sarah Palin has. if they're accurately reported and correct, then people can make a judgment about it.
Or John McCain's relationship with David Ifshin. He showed up at this guy's funeral and delivered the eulogy. He said, David always felt passionate about his country. I learned a lot about courage from David. Those are quotes from John McCain. David Ifshin was the president of the National Student Association in 1970. That year, he actually traveled to Hanoi and urged American troops to rebel against the Vietnam War. Radio Hanoi broadcast his remarks. He even made the cover of Life magazine, standing behind Jane Fonda. People called him a traitor. They said he may have cost American lives. This was a good friend of John McCain's.
Turns out that
McCain believed that people can reform.
Well, I agree with that too. Why are you attacking
Barack Obama for being appointed to a board to which Bill Ayers was also appointed?
Well, actually, on another radio program earlier today, I heard the audio of a CNN report that detailed quite a longer and more extensive relationship between Barack Obama and Bill Ayers. So I tell you, the relationship that's more problematic for Obama is the 20-year relationship with the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. And I think he's happy that that's kind of faded out of the news, because it's hard to explain away his having been a willing member of that person's congregation.
Yeah, well, I guarantee you, Terry, that one is going to come back.
Well, perhaps.
You know, these guys, they're reaching as deep as they can into the bucket. Terry Jeffries, CNSnews.com, the website. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks.
27 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
They need it. I mean, they're having a rough time. They're having a really rough time right now. Oh, my. The office of Congressman, House Minority Leader, Congressman John Boehner, Boehner, became concerned Monday after finding an envelope leaking an oily substance. Police evacuated several buildings before determining that the package, postmarked from Georgia, contained bacon. Yes, somebody sent John Boehner, whatever, sent him some pork. They sent him some pork. The original Maverick, by the way, John McCain out there promoting himself as a Maverick. Oh, I do want to mention that before I get to the Maverick thing. Yesterday, at the very end of the show, somebody called in and said that they had a domestic partner, and therefore his domestic partner's share of his health benefits was taxable. And I didn't get what he was trying to explain, and I got it now. And thank you for the many folks who sent me notes on this. It's called a non-cash taxable fringe benefit, basically for federal income taxes. And if they were legally married, it would not be a problem. And this is one of the reasons why we need to have gay marriage in the United States. Marriage confers thousands of legal benefits and forms of status that are not conferred by things like partnerships or civil unions and whatnot. And it's just fair. I mean, it's just common sense. Anyhow, the original Maverick, played by James Garner, was an amiable con man and gambler. So maybe John McCain is a Maverick. On the other hand, as John Schwartz points out in the New York Times, the word Maverick actually refers to a family. Teralita Maverick, 82, a San Antonio native who proudly carries the name of a family that has been known for its progressive politics since the 1600s, when an early ancestor in Boston got into trouble with the law over his agitation for the rights of indentured servants, said, "I'm just enraged that McCain calls himself a Maverick." In the 1800s, Samuel Augustus Maverick went to Texas and became known for not branding his cattle. He was more interested in keeping track of the land he owned than the livestock on it, Ms. Maverick said. Unbranded cattle then were called Mavericks. That name came to mean anyone who didn't wear another's brand. Sam Maverick's grandson, Fontaine Maury Maverick, was a two-term congressman and a mayor of San Antonio who lost his mayoral re-election bid when conservatives labeled him a communist. He served in the Roosevelt administration, the Smaller War Plants Corporation, and is best known for another coinage. He came up with the term gobbledygook in frustration at the convoluted language of bureaucrats. This Maverick's son, Maury Jr., was a firebrand civil libertarian and lawyer who defended draft resistors, atheists, and others scorned by society. He served in the Texas legislature during the McCarthy era and wrote fiery columns for the San Antonio Express News. His final column, published on February 2, 2003, just after he died at the age of 82, was an attack on the coming war in Iraq. Tara Lita Maverick, sister of Maury Jr., is a member emeritus of the board of the San Antonio chapter of the ACLU of Texas. So it should come as no surprise that Ms. Maverick insists that John McCain, who has voted so often with his party, quote, is in no way a maverick in uppercase or lowercase. It's just incredible the nerve, she said, to suggest that he's not part of that Republican herd. Every time we hear it, all my children and I and all my family, this is Ms. Maverick, shrink a little and say, oh, my God, he said it again. He's a Republican, she said. He's branded. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Margaret in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Margaret.
Hi. This is my first time calling here. I just discovered your station 2 weeks ago, and I'm glad that there's an outlet for those of us who think differently, even here in Texas.
Me too. We are so pleased to be live on AM 1360 there, 50,000 watts in Dallas, Texas. Margaret, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to tell you, I watched that town hall meeting last night, and I thought John McCain, look, the guy is just he should be enjoying his retirement. He's a little too old. He's tried to run before, and the guy is just not qualified. He's just a little too old. He was incoherent. It did not make any sense. He doesn't have any vitality, energy, and that is, it's showing now. And that's why he picked Palin. He put politics before he put his country. And he always claims that he puts country first, but that's a lie, because we all know that he put Palin there because he figured that she was an ultra conservative that would help him to get women and to get those right wingers that thought that he was too liberal.
And the fundamentalist Christians, yeah. No, Margaret, you're absolutely right, and thank you for the call, and thank you for pointing it out. And in fact, as Thomas Friedman points out today in his column in the New York Times, she even goes off on paying taxes. She attacked Joe Biden for saying paying taxes was patriotic. And as Tom Friedman points out, hey, wait a minute. You want to have an army? You don't want to pay for it? What, you want to borrow from China? Is that the more patriotic way, Sarah, to borrow? Or just to print money? Is that the more patriotic way? Do what the Weimar Republic did in Deutschland, in Germany? In the 1920s, just print the money, do what Zimbabwe is doing. That's the more patriotic way. Steve in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Steve.
Hey. And as for the thing about it's a lie, there's a quote we gamers have: "The cake is a lie." Ask any computer gamer; they'll know what I mean.
Okay.
And secondly, with the thing with McCain, when he said that one. Some say that he sounded racist. I say he sounded like Archie Bunker.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And another little quick point.
You know, I think it reflects the worldview that he grew up with. Basically.
How can they get away with that, though? How can they not get called out as racists for that?
I suspect he's going to be called out by a lot of people, Steve.
When?
Today. Today. I predict that will be. Certainly, I'm calling him out on it. I think it was a racist statement. And as the day goes on, I suspect this afternoon, this evening, at least on the cable shows, you're going to see a lot of discussion about this "that one" phrase, and hopefully a call for an apology or an explanation from the McCain camp. Scott in Phoenix, listening to KPHX. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hi, my name's John. I don't know if that's what you're talking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay.
You're on the air, John.
Tom, oh, yeah, call me Scott. I enjoy your show. Call
That's
me.
Okay.
I mean, call
I'll
word.
Call you John.
Yeah, by the way, hi, Scott.
Yeah.
I'm a little surreal here and a little paranoid. Please forgive me. But about last night's debate and the last caller's remark about that one, well, I see Republicans in kind of a comic book mode.
Mm-hmm.
And harking back to Palin's complaint, a comment to Joe Biden, see it ain't so, Joe.
Yeah.
And that adding on to kind of the comedy. And if I was sitting, Tom, if I was sitting in a boardroom or a country club or one of those wealthy private clubs, you know, in New York or Chicago or L.A., I kind of feel that the fellow members would be just bending over with peals of laughter. And this, and add this to the fact that the Republicans are, the GOP is paying no attention whatsoever to congressional subpoenas. And their entire attitude does not seem to be that of a party about to lose power. And the whole thrust of their entire meaning of
right.
being.
John, the question is, are they planning on retaining power and thus not being prosecuted, or are they
exactly.
betting or depending on...
Thank
on,
you.
On, yeah, you're welcome. Or are they depending on George W. Bush to pardon them all on the way out? And I think it's the latter. Although I suspect that the former is in play. I think that this is an election that still could go either way because there's a mind-boggling number of voters being disenfranchised. There's going to be a lot of votes stolen in this election. You know, we'll see how it shakes out. Greg in Hollandale, Florida. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? I'm commenting also on the comment that one. Just I watched CNN last night, and on the post wrap up and commentary, they had the 25 voters, and they posed the question of who do you think won the debate, and a large majority of them said Barack Obama.
Right.
And then when it came down to who would you vote for, let's see, raise your hands, a larger majority said they'd vote for McCain. And it just is like, it's just so stunning to me that it's blatant that there's so much racism in this country that it would be pushed and to a point where it would just hurt us so much further down the road.
Well, it shouldn't surprise you given the makeup of the group. That group, as I recall, was supposed to be undecided voters, right? Anybody
yeah.
who at this point in this election is undecided has not been paying any attention or has an IQ below room temperature.
You're right.
So, you know, it shouldn't surprise us that they said, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to vote for McCain. I mean, it's just it's a setup. It's just a setup. Stan, thanks for the call. Stan in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Stan, got a minute before the break here. What's
okay.
up?
Okay. First of all, welcome to Jacksonville. As of this week, you're on FM 105.7.
Oh,
which,
great. Thank you.
Which we call Radio Free Jacks. We're there. Radio Free Jacksonville.
We're pleased to be there.
Thank
pleased
you.
To be there.
I wanted to feedback quickly on the racial issue with McCain. Please remember, this man is a son and a grandson of admirals. He grew up in a wealthy Navy family in an era when the only black faces he saw were servants.
Yes, John
Sidney Cain. The stewards. It was a special class of enlisted men, only blacks.
Right.
So he literally comes out of that background. The attack on Acorn is part of a broader attack. I saw two letters in a local newspaper today, and it's all trying to smear up Barack Obama. Last point I'd like to make, I'm a labor activist. I'm a union activist. Glad to see the Teamsters are sponsoring your show. I heard that name. But the attack on Barack Obama as a community organizer and an attack on Acorn is part of the broader attack on labor. Very
yes.
distinct and very obvious attack by the Republican Party on unions and organized labor.
Yeah,
so,
very well said, Stan. Very well.
Hey,
very
thank
well
you.
Said. Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening to us there in Jacksonville. Thanks for welcoming me to the city. It's great to be there. Hopefully we'll get down there one of these days soon and do a book signing, do a gig. 45 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartman.org. If tomhartman.com isn't working for you, you can check it out, airamerica.com as well.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at hartmanradio.com.
Save us from the lies. Save our homes from foreclosing. Stop treating us as spies. Save our jobs from leaving. Bring back made in USA. Represent the ones who made you, not the ones who pave your way.
Welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Barbara in Coral Springs, Florida, listening on 940 AM. Hey, Barbara, what's up?
Hi. I just wanted to tell you two things, or I wanted to ask you one question and give you something that happened this morning. I was sitting in my house, and the phone rang, and my privacy director picked it up, and I caught the last part of the phone call, and it was somebody soliciting people to do absentee voting. And, I'm living here on this earth 66 years, and I have never, ever heard a call like that. Why would they solicit people, just inadvertently, just anybody to vote without going down to the polls? I mean, that's a pleasure.
Well, one possible reason might be so that they can throw your ballot away.
Oh, well, that's not going to happen ever. Are you kidding? My ballot's going for Barack no matter what they do.
Yeah.
So,
but this
is Florida, So.
But yeah, but there may be some folks who don't. I mean, that's my immediate, probably paranoid reaction. But I tell you, the Republicans are out there doing everything they can to get as many votes off the table as possible because they know that there's a landslide happening for Barack Obama. Barbara, thanks for sharing that story with us. I appreciate it. Dave in Los Angeles. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I'd like to put an end to this, talking point that's out there about the banks being required to lend to the poor minorities, which caused the problem. The CRA and the Democrats have pushed this forward, so it's all their fault. First off, it was the investment banks that created the SIBs and the CDOs. They did not. They were buying the mortgages directly from the banks, not through Fannie Mae.
Right.
And those banks were not regulated. They don't exist anymore as of two Sundays ago.
Right.
But the other aspect
also
of it,
Fannie and Freddie were apparently forbidden from buying subprime loans. They had to buy
correct.
A loans.
They did conforming loans, and I really have some suspect about whether or not they actually failed or were caused to fail, because there's no way the American public would accept buying subprime loans from the investment banks without Fannie and Freddie going first.
Yeah.
Now, the other aspect of this is that the regulations, the CRA, had nothing to do with cash-out refis. This is where all the money was coming from that was driving this economy for 5 years. It wasn't to do with these second mortgages of cash out refis, pulling this money out, taking a $200,000 home in California, running the value up to $800,000 and pulling that money out and buying a motor coach and Harley Davidsons and water toys. That was not CRA helping minorities get homes.
Right. Right. And in fact, that wasn't, the jumbo loans and the subprime loans were not even showing up in some of the numbers that were being put forward by the Bush administration, because they were just using Fannie Freddie numbers. When Greenspan was talking about 3% of mortgages are going bad, and everybody was saying, oh, it's just 3%.
See, this thing flies in the Midwest and such, where you had a $30,000 home maybe increased to 35 or 40. And people only had one mortgage, one home at a time.
Yeah.
But when you get out to the coast in these hot areas in Las Vegas, Phoenix, et cetera, this is where all this big cash out money was coming from.
Right.
It's just absolutely ridiculous to blame this on a program that when it was out there to stop redlining and had been going on since, 1977?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that was started in the Carter administration, and it was started to stop redlining. And when the Democrats talk about how they wanted more people to own homes, they wanted to dismantle institutional racism. And when the Republicans talked about they wanted more people to own homes, they wanted to do away with regulations that prevented people who couldn't afford to own a home from owning a home, and thus led to the bubble. And that's where we're at. Dave, well said. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Vic in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Vic.
Yeah, hey Tom. I just would like to mention an article that was published in The Nation on McCain's ties to the Russian oligarch. If I may, I would like to read just a few sentences, and maybe you can respond to that if you are aware of this.
Well, if you can just tell me about it, Vic, I'd appreciate it
rather than
you reading it.
Yeah, in mid-September, The Nation website published a photo of McCain celebrating his 70th birthday in Montenegro in August 2006 at a yacht party hosted by convicted Italian felon Raffaello Forlieri and his movie star girlfriend Anne Hathaway. On the same day, one of the largest mega yachts in the world, the Queen Kay, was moored in the same bay of Kotor. This was where the real party was. The owner of the Queen Kay was known as Putin's oligarch, Oleg Deripaska, controlling shareholder of the Russian aluminum giant Russ Oil.
So, Vic, the bottom line here is that McCain was tied in with at least one major Russian oligarch, We also know that Randy Shuneman, the guy who is his chief foreign policy advisor, took $800,000 from Mikhail Saakashvili, the president of Georgia, that who had started his little bombing campaign in Svengali, in the capital city of South Ossetia, just the day before the Russians said, okay, we're not going to let you do that, and they came in. I mean, this McCain is up to his eyeballs in weirdness. I mean, over 80 members of his campaign are or were lobbyists for the financial services industry and the housing industry. I mean, this housing disaster brought to you by the McCain campaign and his association with the oligarchs, as you point out. He 26 years in Congress, and McCain is up to his eyeballs in these things.
I think he undermines the national security, by establishing these ties and making some shady deals behind the back doors. How we cannot respond to this? This is very scary.
Yeah, isn't it odd that McCain's association with Russian oligarchs is not being discussed, but Bill Ayers being on a board with Barack Obama or throwing a fundraiser in his home for Barack Obama is the topic du jour. I mean, it's the ability of the conservative media in the United States, from Drudge to all the right-wing talk shows, over 1,000 right-wing talk radio stations out there. There's, 70 progressive ones, more or less, maybe 80 or 90 shows altogether, stations carrying progressive programming. The power of the right wing to define the agenda of the corporate media is mind-boggling.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you know what you don't know, and sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes everything you know is wrong, as the Firesign Theater says.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind. Everything you know is wrong.
Party like it's 1929. Could you get by like your grandparents did back in 1929 when their jobs and savings evaporated? Asks Matt Stein, the author of a new book, When Technology Fails, the Bible for Emergency Prep and Survival plus Green and Healthy Living. Matt Stein, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you point out on your website, whentechnologyfails.com, that the 1929, the market crashed. Middle-class people, by and large, saw their money just evaporate. If they had anything invested, it was gone. If they had money in the bank, it was gone. But life went on.
Life did go on, but it wasn't very pleasant for a lot of people. But certainly a lot of friends and neighbors would pool together to help each other out. Sometimes helping each other out meant greeting people at the door with their own shotguns to keep the guys away from closing down a farm and giving it to somebody who owned the title on it. But life did go on, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I think none of us really knows exactly how far this is going to go and what is going to happen. And there's a wise old Yankee adage that says, hope for the best, but plan for the worst. So,
right.
The people in Hurricane Katrina were planning on the country to bail them out and take care of them, found that if they'd done a little bit of prior preparation, they would have been in much better shape.
Yeah. So, like having levees that actually worked. But that's a whole other issue. So, Matt, you're an author, an engineer, a building contractor. You've been a school teacher, a carpenter, a rock climbing and ski instructor. You've been all over the place. What are you doing to prepare for the end, as it were?
Well, one of the things I have, I definitely have short-term preparedness down. I've got a grab and run kit. I live in earthquake country and wildfire country. So I've got a trailer with a solar panel on it, and I've got various backcountry water filters and things that I can throw in my car or put on my back if necessary. These are more short term things. In the long term, I used to live on acreage and had a wonderful garden and chickens and all of that stuff. And unfortunately, my savings are really now in my book. Mm-hmm. And my first publisher was bankrupt and never paid me. So
uh-oh.
I'm in the boat with a lot of Americans. So
yeah.
I have a wonderful set of skills and knowledge that will do me well. And I'm hoping that I can actually have a piece of property of my own. But if
yeah.
that doesn't happen, I can at least carry my skills and knowledge with me wherever I go to help me work with other people.
I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of communities coming together. I mean, this during the 30s, I wrote the foreword to Dennis Weaver's autobiography, All the World's a Stage, and much of the first third of his book is about growing up in the Dust Bowl in North Texas and Oklahoma, ultimately ending up in Oregon picking strawberries as migrant farm workers. This is Dennis Weaver, the actor who recently
sure.
died. And he talks at some length about how people came together, people worked together. You could hitchhike and people would help you out. You could show up at somebody's house, people would help you out. It was a time that the nation, in many ways, had a sense of self and a sense of community that we've lost to a large extent.
I think that that's true of hard times throughout the world. I think it's, for the most part, when there's a big disaster, you see people pulling together and helping each other out. I mean, when the Loma Prieta quake took down the Cypress Freeway in Oakland, there was pictures of people who'd been homeless, kind of gutter types, who rose to the occasion and were risking their life crawling amongst the wreckage to pull survivors out of their squashed cars and trucks.
Right.
And you really see 10 to 1, 100 to 1, you see people helping each other out, lending that hand. You see the best of human spirit coming out. The media tends to focus on the thugs that come out and rob and go out and break into stores and, you know, wander down the streets with stereos on their side. But most of us are out there helping each other out when times are tough. And my book is a wonderful handbook for practical how-to knowledge for how to grow things, how to grow biointensive, grow a huge amount of food in a small area, how to put together a renewable energy system for your home, how to use low-tech methods to heal yourself of most ailments that may come down the way. And these methods may even work far superior to high-tech pharmaceuticals for things like AIDS, hepatitis C, and cancer. So there's just a wealth of knowledge there that's really helpful. And it's helpful when times are good as well as when times are bad. But when times are bad, you may just thank God you have that copy on your shelf because you could pull it down and find the information you needed in there.
There you go. Okay, Matt Stein, the book is When Technology Fails, whentechfails.com is the website. Matt, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Good talking with you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. I have to share this John McPenguin video. This thing has gone viral. It's just incredible. You go over to YouTube and search for John McPenguin. They've taken John McCain the day after Sarah Palin was announced, and they've put the penguin. This is from the old TV show, and they've put the Burgess Meredith, playing that part of the penguin. They've put a purple top hat on him, and he's got a purple umbrella under his arm. And here he is. This is the actual John McCain, and talking to the audience about Sarah Palin.
How about Sarah Palin last night, huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
How about her, huh?
Yeah.
How about the job she did,
yeah.
Huh?
That's so funny. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How about Sarah Palin last night, huh? Yeah. How about her, huh? How about the job she did, huh?
Yeah. Pretty strange. Pretty strange. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Philip in Quilsine, Washington? How do you pronounce it, Philip?
Quilsine,
thank you.
Hi, I'm one of the economically challenged voters, and on this $700 billion bailout, I called my congressmen and senators, and I just got off the phone with the financial services, and I was just trying to find out exactly where that $700 billion is coming from. I thought, we have to borrow it because we're in deficit spending already. And I'm still not sure where exactly somebody's going to be receiving that money. Where is it coming from?
It's coming from the sale of government debt. The government, the Treasury Department will issue new Treasury bonds and bills, basically debt instruments, ranging from 6 months of maturity to 20 years. that will total, actually, it's going to be over $800 billion. Because
and that's all guaranteed.
Pardon?
That's all guaranteed, those yes. Treasury bonds?
Yeah, they're guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States. In other words, we have borrowed it in our names. They have
so we're lending it to ourselves.
Well, we would be lending it to ourselves if we had the money to lend it to ourselves. The fact of the matter is that many of these treasuries are going to be purchased by Chinese, by Saudi Arabians, by, you know, who knows, Venezuelans.
So we're hoping that these people are going to, we're issuing these and we're hoping that somebody's going to buy them?
That's right. That's right. And,
that's not guaranteed. This $700 billion hasn't been.
That's right. The Bush family may buy a bunch of it. You know, the George W. Bush family, much of their savings are in treasury bonds. You know, they do very well when we're in debt. Cheney actually has moved most of his money offshore. It's all outside the United States. He's invested in euros. So I doubt that he would be buying them. But, you know, the Saudis have bought an awful lot of them. You know,
so they've already bought. Is there any number of how much of that $700 billion is?
Well, it hasn't been issued yet, so we don't know. But they had to raise the debt ceiling, and in fact the debt clock has been busted. You know, they're having to add two more digits to the debt clock because we're passing $10 trillion worth of debt. Keep in mind our annual budget, the entire annual budget of the United States is $3 trillion,
uh-huh.
And we are now $10 trillion, heading in on $11 trillion in debt. When Ronald Reagan came into office, it was less than $1 trillion. And Reagan left us a $3 trillion debt. George Bush Sr. took us up to around 4.5. And when Shrub came into office, it was around 5. And we're now pushing $11 trillion.
I just like to say one more thing. I appreciate the last guest you had, and I just took a truckload of stuff to the local food bank, and I have enough and food in my dried, frozen, and canned to probably last my wife and I the rest of the year, and still give stuff away. And
yeah, well,
we don't have a very big garden, but it's amazing what you can grow.
Yeah, and if you live in earthquake country, as most of us on the West Coast do, or fire country or whatever, I mean, here increasingly now tornado country anywhere in the United States or hurricane country, it's probably a good idea. Maybe
okay.
The Mormons have the right idea. Philip, thank you very much for the call. 16 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Going to drop into our live chat room. TomHartmann.org seems to be working. And, of course, AirAmerica.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Joe Biden giving a just out there really barn burner speech today.
Campaign has reached a very difficult place, and I'm being serious here.
Let's start over again.
John McCain's campaign has reached a very difficult place, and I'm being serious here. It's a difficult place. If they wanted to be intellectually honest, they really only have three choices. One, they can deny that we're in trouble and say that things are pretty good, we just need a little fine-tuning. That's one intellectually honest position they could argue from their perspective. Two, they could explain why the policies of the last 8 years, why they aren't a problem, why is some other reason that's caused us to get in this god-awful deep hole we've been dug into both at home and abroad. Or thirdly, they could be intellectually honest and acknowledge that the economic situation that we face today is the final verdict of a failed economic philosophy, and it needs a wholesale change, total change.
There you go. Time for a change, in other words. You can, over at lcurve.org, curve, letter L, curve.org, you can see this is income distribution. Now, keep in mind, in terms of wealth, the top 1% of Americans own 90% of all the wealth in America, and they have 50% of all the income. So let's just look at the income, which is not as bad as wealth in terms of disparity. If the U.S. population, this is from the lcurve.org site, if the U.S. population is represented along the length of the football field, arranged in order of income, the median U.S. family income, the family at the 50-yard line, is $40,000 a year. That's a stack of $100 bills that's 1.6 inches high. So if you're the median, if you're right in the middle of incomes in the United States, it's around $42,000 a year, I think. You're standing on the 50-yard line, and your income for the year is sitting next to you on the football field. It's a stack of $100 bills, 1.6 inches high. Family on the 95-yard line, the 95th percentile, earns about $100,000 a year. They have a stack of $100 bills about 4 inches high. At the 99-yard line, this is the top 1% of wage earners. The income is about $300,000. That's a stack of $100 bills about a foot high. 1 foot from the goal line, the curve reaches $1 million. That's a 40-inch high stack of $100 bills. 40 inches, a little more than 3 feet tall. That's 1 foot from the goal line. When you get right to the goal line, the top 0.0001% of America, and the stack of $100 bills is 30 miles tall. That's income. It's even worse for wealth. So, pretty strange stuff. Pretty strange stuff. By the way, there's another thing I wanted to mention to you. The Maryland State Police, this is in the Washington Post today. The Maryland State Police classified, article by Lisa Ryan, classified 53 nonviolent activists as terrorists and entered their names and personal information into state and federal databases that track terrorism suspects, the state police chief acknowledged yesterday. Police Superintendent Terrence B. Sheridan revealed at a legislative hearing that the surveillance operation, which targeted opponents of the death penalty and opponents of the Iraq War, was far more extensive than was known when its existence was disclosed in July. The surveillance took place over 14 months from 2005 and 2006 under the administration of former Governor Robert Ehrlich, the Republican. The former state police superintendent who authorized the program, Thomas Hutchins, defended the program in testimony yesterday. He said the program was a bulwark against potential violence and called the anti-war and anti-death penalty activists, quote, fringe people, end quote. Sheridan said protest groups were also entered as terrorist organizations in the database, but his staff has not identified which of those protest groups they put in. Stunned senators pressed Sheridan to apologize to the activists for the spying assailed in an independent review last week as overreaching by law enforcement officials who are oblivious to their violation of the activists' right of free association and free speech, free expression. The letter obtained by the Washington Post does not apologize, but admits the state police have, quote, no evidence whatsoever of any involvement in violent crime, end quote, by those persons that they have classified as terrorists. Hutchins said, this isn't spying. I doubt anyone who has used that term has ever met a spy. What John Walker did is spying, he says. Oh, so putting nonviolent Americans who are protesting the Iraq War on a terrorist watch list and following them around and tracking their actions, that's not spying. Something really stinks in Maryland. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
'Cause when I was a child, with my heart in my hand, I pledged my allegiance to the flag of this land, where Kennedy was killed in a Texas cow town. And we learned how to hide it from the bomb underground. So when the things that you tell me don't match what you do, I'd be a fool not to have a huge problem with you. And I'll still stand and fight for this land of the free. First we'll take back the ground that we lost in D.C. So stand and let your voice be heard. Stand and let your voice be heard. Stand up, speak out. This is still our country. So stand and let your voice ring free. Stand
34 minutes past the hour on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman radio program. Our buddy machine alerts. I shared this with you earlier, actually, toward the end of last week, but it bears repeating. A glitch that would have kept votes from being counted in the presidential and other top-of-ticket races was discovered during a pre-election check of a voting machine in Santa Fe County, New Mexico, officials said. The error was found Friday and corrected the same day. Heavily Democratic Santa Fe County was the only county in which the problem occurred, according to Automated Election Services, which prints ballots, codes memory cards, and provides other election assistance to the state and the counties. The problem was in the memory cards. Because the problem was in the memory cards, all the county's tabulating machines would have been affected had it not been caught. And the error was that if you voted a straight ticket, your vote for president and for United States Senator would not have been counted in heavily Democratic Santa Fe. But they say they've fixed that problem. Meanwhile, in New Mexico, also New Mexico, C sends me a note. I went to vote in person today, C says. Gave my notification from the Secretary of State that I'm registered. They looked it up in the computer, assigned me a number, the computer with and asked my current address, and the computer with the voting rolls in it assigned me a number, which was written on a form on an index card-sized piece of paper. They handed me a paper ballot and made me sign and date another form that said I had voted. I voted manually, circles filled in with a black pen. I gave the index card size form to a person at the optical reader and put the ballot through the optical reader. The optical reader read the ballot and assigned the ballot a number so that it could be reread if necessary for accuracy. And so you're following with me so far? No audit trail, number 7, no audit trail is given to me, the voter, to prove that the optical scanner scanned my ballot correctly. Well, there's that. But worse, C notes, than no verification of what the machine read, even though no one can read the index size card form and tell who I am because it's all numbers, the numbers on the computerized list of voters can be checked against the numbers on the index card size forms and then against the numbers that the optical scanner assigned the ballot. And therefore, all my votes, now scanned electronically into the Secretary of State's office, can be figured out. It'd be easy to write a program to do this for all or for specified voters by neighborhood, town, registered party, thus eliminating the secrecy of the ballot. I was a project manager, process engineer, and IT for 8 years. I understand the logic of how things work and can be made to work. Most people don't understand the process and think because their name isn't written on the index card size form that they are free and clear. The leading man in the optical reader gave this as the explanation and didn't get it until I explained it to her. When I did, she got a deer in the headlights look and said, oh my gosh, as she awakened to the system that we've had, that we have. C says, but those of us on the inside of IT realize anyone can now be outed at some future point because we are all connected and reported easily to those who collect and repay those who do not go along with them, e.g. Nixon's dirty tricks list, among other examples. The information could be used to deny those voters work, to deny them security clearances or government assistance, at the very least, or incarcerate or prosecute them in an Orwellian state. I never thought posse comitatus would be eliminated. I'm not paranoid, but at this point, I'm not sure I can count on anything, any of the protections written by our founding fathers continuing in place if the wrong people are in charge. Ain't technology grand? Yeah. And just a quick, you know, let's quickly review all the major recessions of the last 150 years. The Panic of 1873, Ulysses Grant, a Republican, the Long Depression, Grant, Hayes, Garfield, and Arthur, all Republicans. The Panic of 1893, Benjamin Harrison, a Republican. Panic of 1907, Theodore Roosevelt, a Republican. The Great Depression, Warren Harding, Herbert Hoover, Republicans. The Recession of 53 and 57, Eisenhower, Republicans. The 73 crisis, it was called, Nixon, a Republican. The 1980s recession, Ronald Reagan, a Republican. The early 1990s recession, George Bush Sr., a Republican. And the recession of 2008, George W. Bush, a Republican. How many times, and thanks, Celia, for that, how many times do we need to point this out? Gail in Salem, Virginia. Hey, Gail, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Tom, I was speaking. I wanted to address something Terry Jeffries said when he was talking about Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac,
right,
and the government did this and the government did that. He failed to mention who is or was the government at that time.
It's us.
To me, we had a Republican president and a Republican-controlled Congress. Isn't that the government?
Well, yeah, to that's who was running the government. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's somehow the conservatives ignore that. You know, they're very good at that. Gail, thank you for making that point. I appreciate the call. Very, very well said. Very well said. Marshall in Sonoma, California. Hey, Marshall.
Hi, Tom. I have always been concerned about them stealing the vote. And when I heard the other day, Palace's research with John F. Kennedy Jr. Bobby Kennedy Jr. That I took all that information down and I emailed it to all my friends and I told them to email it to all of their friends. And I think whatever we do, if we could somehow have this big tree starting with your program, that maybe a lot of people would be saved a lot of aggravation and we certainly would be able to get the vote that we should be able to get, because I don't put it past them. They are not the Republicans that I grew up with, although I am a Democrat, because the sleaziest people I've ever seen. Pardon the expression.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. 866-OurVote.org, by the way. 866-OurVote is the Election Protection Organization. And
right.
That's a great one. GregPalace.com is Greg's website. MarkCrispinMiller.blogspot.com. Brad Friedman's BradBlog.com. But 866-OurVote.org is a website that everybody needs to know about. And the phone number, 866-OurVote, is the number for, you know, if there are problems out there. Thanks for the call. Guy in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Guy.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. This comes full circle in the importance of your voice out there. You know, I call it the play on his book, Obama's book. I call this the audacity of ignorance. And I only wish he would be stronger on this point last night, because he would have buried this election and it would be over already as far as I'm concerned. You know, people don't understand. You know, we don't learn from Katrina. We didn't learn from the real estate crisis. And what will go down as one of the biggest blunders in history is to invade Iraq. You know, 70% of America says that they're against the war in Iraq. So you go with that. You attack the Republicans where their biggest claim is, which is strength on security.
Well, Obama made that point last night.
Yeah, but
twice,
I mean,
in fact.
If he stays with going back to the theme that there's a major fundamental flaw, you talk about putting lipstick on a pig, calling the surge a temporary lull. If we back up to 2003, we're no better off. Ask Americans, what did we gain from Iraq? And then you look at the wasted money. And then remember, and people miss this, because everybody thinks Bush went in there to get the oil. He didn't go in to get the oil. Oil was at $25 a barrel. When he cut off Iraq's supply of oil, he jackknifed the price 400%. And economists are going to be unraveling this, Tom, for years, the implications of taking the most strategic and important commodity to the developed world and inflating it five times its current value on the implications on the economy. And when you look at the waste, when you look at the money, and that's when Obama was really hitting on all signals, on all cylinders, when you take the money that was wasted, okay, that could have been used in this economy now, in the Iraq war, what has America gained from the Iraq war except to embolden Iran and line the pockets of all the state sponsors of terrorism while Osama's out there planning? And this is the weakest militarily we've ever been. And it's all because of this flawed philosophy.
Right, and you can take it right back to Cheney and Bush.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves.
Exactly.
Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
So there you go.
So here,
and that was before the war.
Aligned himself. Aligned himself with Bush, and that's how you drive the dagger into this whole campaign.
No, you're absolutely right, Guy, and hopefully they'll do more of it. Dan in San Diego. Hey, Dan, got a minute before the break. What's up?
Okay, I had four things. I'll try to get through them quickly about the debate. And the first one was when answering the question from the retired Navy chief, McCain said everything he learned about leadership he learned from a Navy chief. And what struck me about that is you know, it's just BS and pandering to the moment. I mean, because if that was true.
Well, Tom Brokaw set that up for him. I mean, it was such a softball. He set that up for him.
But he kind of buried himself. If he learned everything from a Navy chief, what did he learn at the Naval Academy from 4 years? And what about the other people he served with? Or what about his father, a Navy admiral? He didn't learn any leadership from those people?
Oh, that's a good point.
And then the second point is, the guy, when he spoke to the guy about the economy, and at some point he said, maybe you haven't heard of Fannie and Freddie. And it showed how out of touch McCain is, you know, besides being somewhat condescending.
Well, he was talking to a black guy. He was talking to an African-American. And he was, I think that, you know, it was belying very subtly, but, you know, you could see it. I think it was just showing the racist attitude of John McCain, you know. Is referring to Barack Obama. It's that one. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman program at hartmanradio.com.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Joe Biden today.
Folks, at the same time, remarkable as well as reassuring is what you didn't hear from those folks. You didn't hear.
He's talking about last night's the questions.
A single question about the ugly inferences and the unbecoming personal attacks launched by the McCain campaign on Barack Obama. You didn't hear one single average person ask that. Barack Obama showed again last night that he understands. He understands that these debates aren't about Governor Palin and me. They aren't about Barack Obama and John McCain. These debates, this election, is about you, not us.
9 minutes before the hour. Dave in Detroit. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Well, I'm wondering, I haven't heard anybody else mention it, but about 10 days ago, my wife received a very well-packaged DVD about a scared DVD about the Muslim faith and how they want to...
Yeah, we got everyone in Portland here got one in our newspaper. They've distributed, I think, 28 million of them is the number around the United States. And it's
right, and the only thing political on it, it said, and this is the most important election, obviously, for people to connect the dots, the people that believe that Obama's a Muslim. So
yeah, it's all playing into the phony suggestion that he's a Muslim, and you know, Jerome Corsi is now back from Kenya, and he's going to be running around peddling that one, and it's all pretty tragic. It's all very tragic. Yeah, Dave, thanks a lot for the call. I mean, this is just how bad it is. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. Well, everybody's talking about the debate. I mean, it's the issue.
And what's the, you know, in among the cognoscenti, or the however you say that word, the insiders in Washington D.C. What's the buzz?
Well, the buzz is that there was a marked contrast in ages between the two candidates, and that was something that was very noticeable. And also that the John McCain's disdain for Barack Obama is something that he just simply cannot mask, and that came through very clearly in the debate. Also that there was nothing that really changed the way that the campaign is going. That it was frankly boring.
Hmm. Yeah, that was the headline on Drudge. It was boring. I didn't find it boring at all. I thought it was a very good debate. I think that the conservatives, though, wanting to minimize some of the points that were made and the fact that Barack Obama won it, might want to try to trivialize it by calling it boring.
I think that's possibly true. I thought it was very interesting that at several points in the debate, it did seem as though Tom Brokaw was giving more time to John McCain than he was to Barack Obama.
He was, and he thanked John McCain five times, and he never thanked Obama. This is the same Tom Brokaw who the Washington Post reported was playing shuttle diplomacy between NBC and the McCain camp, trying to organize this whole thing. This is the same Tom Brokaw who two weekends ago on Meet the Press closed a segment with Steve Schmidt and David Axelrod, the respective campaign leaders of the McCain and Obama campaigns, by pointing out that the majority of Americans still think that John McCain is best as commander-in-chief, when in fact the numbers he was quoting were weeks old, and they were from the day after the Republican convention, and the question had not even been phrased the way that he was quoting it. I mean, it's becoming pretty transparent that as much as Keith Olbermann is an Obama partisan, Tom Brokaw is a McCain partisan.
And you've got to wonder how these people are picked. You know, I mean, one says it's because, well, they're network anchors, but at a certain point, being a network anchor ceases to have any real meaning.
Well, you know, I think the theory is that a network anchor should be an independent broker, a person who's not taking a position, a person who's relatively neutral, and you know, I think Brokaw did a good job of imitating that, but my sense of the debate was that Brokaw's bias was just on this. This is a note from this is a letter to the editor, actually, by a woman here in Portland. And she CC'd me. She said his performance as the moderator of the town hall meeting last night was shameful. He scolded Senator Obama for using up his time. He let Senator McCain go on and on after the timing lights went off. He thanked Senator McCain for answers. He did not thank Senator Obama. In fact, he interrupted and stopped Senator Obama from responding. There's also a very telling question pick. Brokaw stated he was in charge of choosing the questions. How convenient. He chose a former Navy man to read the question, and the guy was in the front row. Perfect for a Navy man, Senator McCain, to go over and shake his hand and compliment the former chief petty officer. How very canned and set up it looked. So
it's a very good point. And I have still not got over McCain calling Obama that one. I don't think I'll ever get over that.
Yeah. Did he mean that? I mean, charitably, I'd like to think he meant, you know, that one of us, the one of the two of us who's running for president.
Oh, Tom, come on.
But, you know, you mean he thought that black guy?
I don't even know if he was even going black guy. I think he was just disdain, that one.
That one who's not fully, he's not part of the Millionaires Club, he's not one of us, et cetera, you know, from McCain's point of view, McCain with his 13 houses and 14 cars or whatever it is.
He's just that one over there.
I know. At the end, McCain, Obama went up and reached out to shake McCain's hand, and McCain turned away, and so Obama just moved his hand about 4 inches to the left and shook Cindy's hand.
It was sad.
Yeah, it really was. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. Well, you know, there is still much that can be done. We have to get out there and get active. Tomorrow, Bill Gertz, conservative columnist, he's got a new book, How Unelected Bureaucrats, Liberal Democrats, and Big Government Republicans Are Undermining America's Security. Say what? And Ellen Hodgson Brown is going to be here. She's the author of Web of Death. This is going to be fascinating. Don't forget, my friends, activism, democracy, it all begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.